podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. Right, so, if you are Chris Sutton, look away now. Good news for followers of the Premier League. You don't have to go to any more games because Chris Sutton already knows everything. His column summing up the weekend was brilliant. It just rehashed everything that had already been said by everybody else, seemingly forever. These are the headline bullet points from his article. One, Old Trafford is not as intimidating as it used to be. Two, Brighton deserve to win. Yeah. Three, I wonder why Everton haven't signed a striker yet. Okay. And four, Arsenal won on Friday, therefore they look the real deal. And it takes some doing to be the most predictable writer in the Daily Mail, but I think he can do it.
Is that where he's writing? Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, this is what happens when you have to get the paper for your dad.
I see that Chris Sutton, by the way, has taken over now that Mark Lawrenson has stepped away.
The predictions,
yeah. So presumably, you know, we're going to. It's a bit of a bold move for him, isn't it? Because we're going to be able to measure the accuracy of his predictions on a weekly basis. Well, because Lawrenson was always relentlessly mid-table, wasn't he? They'd have a table of how the celebrities had done against, you know, pitted against the expert Mark Lawrenson. It was always relentlessly mid-table, like tossing a coin, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, well, yes, Chris Sutton lost quite heavily on his first prediction to Alistair Bruce Ball, strangely enough.
Excellent. How lovely. Yeah, I was very taken to change the subject by the news that Donald Trump's golf course in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, was raided by the FBI, who were apparently searching for crates of classified documents the former president lifted when he left the White House in January of 2021. So they've been taking their time. You'd have to say that. Yeah. I mean, he handed over 15 crates of stolen classified material to the National Archive some time ago, and now they've gone through it and found that there's 12 more boxes they've found in a basement, apparently, at Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, given Trump's propensity for flushing documents down the toilet, I presume it's taken them this long to round up enough volunteers to go to the place.
I presume he flushes the documents down the toilet because he thinks, now I'm president, I can put legal documents I want my arse on.
Exactly. His inexplicable stick at all of his live rallies is how many times people have to flush the toilet to get rid of stuff, you know. And he's going, you have to flush the toilet 10 times, 15 times. And people are going, what? But now that we know that he's flushing classified documents down there, it makes a little bit more... Because it takes a long time for them to get soggy enough to disappear.
Yeah, we're in the people at the back shouting, take the staples out! anyway, good news in football's battle against corruption, I have to say.
Oh, good, finally.
You know, we've been... relentlessly losing these little wars, which we know about.
Blatter was innocent only last week, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Yes. But you know, I'm enjoying seeing some of the football authorities stamping down on even the slightest corruption. So in Sierra Leone, I see Gulf FC and Kaluna Rangers were forced to replay matches against Kakwima and Lumbebu, respectively.
Well done.
Respectively. I was quite pleased with that. Galt FC beat Kakwima 3-0 in the replayed match, while Kaluna Rangers lost 1-0 to Lumbebu. In the original games, just to let you know, Gulf FC had won their original game 91-1. Right? Whilst Kaluna Rangers managed a clean sheet in a 95-0 victory.
That's more than a goal a minute.
But it actually gets better because, I mean, well done for spotting it, you know, the Sierra Leone FA.
Something smells off here. What can it be?
Yeah, exactly. But one of the great things was that Golf scored 80 goals in the last 35 minutes of the game. And Kalula...
Well, then, obviously the opposition had given up by then.
Yeah, yeah. And Kalula scored 90 goals in the last half an hour, which is 3 goals a minute, including kickoffs.
Yeah. So, I wonder if they're going to be looking into Dundee United against AZ Alkmaar.
Yeah. I think he's gone in at half-time, hasn't he, Dundee United? And the manager's gone, let's not have another one of those Kalula Rangers results.
Yeah, exactly. It's Lum Babu all over again, boss. Yeah. No, yes. Pull yourselves together.
Oh, no. Yeah, very good. I just think if you're going to cheat...
Cheat big.
It's big. Rubbish. Well, yeah, it's rubbish cheating, though, isn't it?
It is. It's better, yeah.
What if we just tell him we won 95-0? That'd be great, wouldn't it? Anyway.
I saw that several leading universities have attached trigger warnings to a range of literary works, telling students that they may encounter material that is emotionally challenging, God help us all, including works by Chaucer, who mentions the plague. You know, and Shakespeare, there's some stabbing, some suicide, and blokes using blackface to play Othello, very upsetting. And Dickens, in case students are traumatised by discovering that he invented Christmas, apparently. But anyway, there have been moves to attach similar trigger warnings to reports of United's game with Brighton last week, but it wasn't clear that enough United fans could read to make it worth bothering.
Yeah.
There we go. And I saw Tony Adams says he's swapping his battered football boots for a set of strictly soft shoes. to go on Strictly Come Dancing. And I think he can't still be wearing his football boots, can he, after all this time? That would be a bit mad, wouldn't it? It'd be a bit mad to still be wearing his boots. How long is it since he played? It's 15 years, isn't it, at least?
Yeah, it's got to be. Although John Terry's still wearing his, of course.
Well, just in case he has to go up and collect a trophy. Yeah,
and shin pads, sort. Yes.
Yeah. No, good. Well, so let's move on to our thing.
Can I just suggest that Tony Adams, if he does a Saturday Night Fever thing, he'll have his arm in the air just like he always has.
Yeah, just like he always did. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing is, though, he's going to be hoping to get more than one or nil off the judges, isn't he?
Yes.
It's not a good arena in which to keep a clean sheet. You'd have to say that.
Yes.
But anyway, so the BBC, talking of the BBC, suddenly, controversially, without warning, axed the reading of the classified results at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Were you aware of this as it happened, or was you only following up?
I absolutely was aware of it as it happened, because I'd been to see Stoke beat Blackpool, and I was driving back, and I just suddenly thought, well, I don't know all the other results. And then poor old Mark Chapman, who is a fantastic presenter, had to read them at such a rate fit them in that you could scarcely discern between one game and another.
I know. Well, this is what it's for. This is what Sports Report was for. I mean, I've been to many an away game and been anxious about parking the car near enough to the ground to get back to it by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's one of the criteria that I use for how close I can get to the game, and people have been saying all over the the newspapers and the internet, they're saying, well, nobody listens to it anymore. You can get the results off Final Score. You get the results off your phone. You know, all this crap. But this is what it's for. It's for getting back to your car after a game and hearing all the results as you're driving away. That's what it's for. I mean, Sport and Culture Secretary Nadine Dorries, lovely person, said that this strikes her as the wrong decision, to which the rest of the world replied, who asked you? And what do you care? You hate the BBC and you hate football. Shut up. I was imagining Charlotte Green reading about this in the newspaper, which, you know, was describing her as reading the results from 2013 to the end of last season and going, what? And what a thing to do to one.
Excellent work. Yeah. I mean, it's true. I was just thinking about that, you know, running back to the car. And of course, there were the people who went one step further who used to go to the game with a transistor radio.
Yeah,
if you remember.
And you used to be able to hear, walking away, someone would have it on their shoulder by their ear, and you'd walk next to that guy to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely right. And they'd say, United have lost, or so and so won, or whatever. And it's all part of the community of football. My God, so it is.
Well, it is. I mean, you just want your spirit rebels at the thought that it's change and I'm an old man and I fear it.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, some so-called insiders at the BBC in some of the articles about this said that it should be possible, it should be possible to read the results in half the time that Charlotte Green did it. Again, you know, just imagine Charlotte Green reading that and going, but I read them slowly too. Allow listeners time to check the pool's coupons. That's what the whole thing has always been for.
Yes, exactly. This could go, I'm looking forward to some more of these, by the way.
Well, let's have people tweet in.
Suggest them.
Tweet in and suggest our suggestions for ways in which Charlotte Green might be reacting to this news.
Yes. Things that are funny when they sound like the football results. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But it is actually another nail in the coffin of the football pyramid, because it's saying you should prefer to have the live game at 5:30 than all the other results in
anything
the whole
else
of the country
that we could possibly do. I mean, this is what Mike Ingham, the venerable BBC commentator, put it down to, is the growing obsession with elite clubs. It's happening because Sports Report is being shortened and cut in half, actually, because the BBC now has the rights to commentate on the live Premiership game on Saturday at 5:30, which it didn't have before. So it would run up to 6:06, wouldn't it, before? But if they want to save time, you know, maybe just skip Hamilton Academicals and Wolverhampton Wanderers. There's no need for that many syllables in today's go-getter society. And, you know, it occurs to me that Charlotte could read the results in half the time if she only did the home teams. You know, that would be a thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you fiddle with these things at your peril, don't you? I mean, the BBC has such a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, people have been listening to this since the beginning of James Alexander Gordon in 1974. You know, people have been listening to this since it started in 1948. The programme has used the same theme tune, Out of the Blue, except on one occasion, back in 2013, which produced an immediate avalanche of complaint and criticism. And Mark Bugatch, who was presenting it then, had to assure listeners that it hadn't been axed. And then they played it at the end. So the avalanche of criticism achieved the theme tune before the programme had even finished.
I told you we shouldn't have dropped him, Gaffer. Luckily, he's on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mess with the BBC listenership at your peril, don't you? It's like when they made the Archers into IT consultants. That didn't last, did it? That never lasted. That didn't stick with that.
No, there's only ever about four Premiership games on a Saturday.
Yes, exactly. So the Sports Report is about the pyramid as much as it's about listening to what the elite teams have done. Because what the elite teams have done is they've bought into a system that means that they're playing on Friday night, they're playing on Monday night, and they're playing on Sunday. You know, so Sports Report is about everyone else. And so tell us what everyone else has done.
it's just saying it's a fair swap somehow, you know, a 5:30 Premiership match for all the other games in the world.
No. I mean, I you would argue that Sports Report is such an institution that the BBC shouldn't even have bid for the rights for the 5:30 game on a Saturday because they haven't got a slot for it.
But they've got so many
channels. The BBC put the football on one of the other ones, you know, on a Saturday, you know, and leave Sports Report alone.
Well, it used to be on Radio 2, didn't it? Yeah, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, but I mean, the only good thing is, of course, and I'm going to be mentioning him a lot. It means that Robbie Savage and Chris Sutton go further later in the night to fill some sort of Tommy Vance spot.
Yeah,
and there's one for the youngsters.
Yes, exactly. Working their way back. Oh, not the snooze slot, boss.
A crying shame. Anyway, we in our live show, which we're doing on the 11th of September at the King's Place, which is in King's Cross, strange enough.
We're doing a
live version of the Sloping Pitch, and we may well do the classified football results.
because the problem that the BBC are having with them is that they take too long. But from our point of view, they take up a lot of time that we don't have to think of other stuff to do.
Stuff to do, exactly.
So I think we should maybe do 2 or 3 weeks worth of classified football results. Do classified football result jokes that our listeners have sent in. That's what we should spend the time doing.
Because you've got to imagine that a lot of people who work on sports report, used the classified football results as a time to go and have a piss. I can imagine somebody in there just, you know, having the doodah, and this bloke saying, it's a shame about them axing the classified. What? Having to run back in, swiftly buckling up their trousers.
Are you having a fantasy about being caught in a urinal next to James Alexander Gordon? Say, what are you doing here? It's 2 minutes past five.
It's five. You fool.
Anyway, yes, so this...
Are you having a number one? Oh, you're having a...
Hey, these jokes write themselves.
They do. Thank God. Yes, it's 11th of September, King's Place. Just look up Sloping Pitch or look up King's Place or look up Sloping Pitch and King's Place. And you'll find details of how to come and see us. And we're just going to take a little break now while Chris reads the classified football results. So, welcome back. Chris Sutton lost 110-50 in his predictions on the BBC website.
Well, as we know, stats are important.
Stats are very, very, very important. So, Oldham, my friend, Oldham.
Yes. Well, before we turn our attention to the brightly coloured widescreen kaleidoscope of the Premier League, let us first, as you say, sneak a glimpse into the distorted, monochrome, arty nightmare sequence that is life in the National League, a league so forlorn and misbegotten that even Vanarama have washed their hands of it, whoever they are, which is where Oldham Athletic, my team, find themselves languishing. Early league tables are funny, aren't they? And I can remember a time when they wouldn't even think of doing them until at least three matches in, not even on Sports Report. But now they do them after the first game, don't they? Arsenal stay top after a 2-0 win away at Crystal Palace, hanging on to the lead they secured by virtue of alphabetical order over a century ago. But in our early league table, our 0-0 draw away at Torquay saw us settle in 14th place. And if we can stop there, it would represent one of our better recent seasons. We dream. Still of a top half finish, which would be our first since 2009, but a period of cautious consolidation could provide that springboard to 10th. Fingers crossed. We had only three of the no-hopers who contrived to drop us out of the league altogether playing. Sadly, not the three I'd have chosen, apart from Jordan Clark, who's decent enough. And amongst the new faces was our most recent acquisition, only just before the game, Charlie Cooper, son of Mark, grandson of Terry, the great Leeds and England fullback, which made me feel very old.
Wow, very old. Yes.
I remember him. What a great player he was. And injured for the 1970 World Cup, wasn't he?
Got clattered. Yeah.
Stoke were a repository, weren't they, for the grand offspring of the famous last season, weren't they? Do they still have a smattering?
Yeah, we've still got a smattering. We've got a Wright Phillips, and we've got a Campbell.
Yeah. And Wright Phillips is the grandson.
Grandson. Yeah. As I think you said, that, you know, it's like we're doing the Scooby Doo and Scrappy Two show.
Yes,
you know,
exactly,
where the generations just go down. Stoke won on Saturday. Stoke actually played quite well on Saturday. You know, I'm loath. You know, it's a bit like you saying about league tables not being published this early in the season. I'm loath to make any generalisations, although I did make quite a lot last week about how terrible we were. And we were rather good on Saturday. But then, of course, pleasingly, we went back to our losing ways on Tuesday when we lost to Morecambe.
On penalties. And there were only 10 of them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. As I'm up in Edinburgh, I was trying to follow the Oldham game online, which was a dispiriting affair. Ideally, there would have been pictures, of course, so I could at least start recognising some of the newcomers, most of whom I hadn't heard of. When we were in the league, seems so long ago now, you could get iFollow, the club-based service. You can get audio commentary, still, featuring the veteran club servant Roy Butterworth, whose catchphrase is, "Oh, dearie me." And you can get pictures if you're abroad because of the broadcasting rights thing. Or if you can get your son to subscribe for you while he's working in South Korea and then watch it using a VPN. But that was last year. In the former Vanarama, however, you can only get the audio wherever you are in the world because the clubs can no longer afford a camera. So I spent a joyless hour of build-up trying to subscribe to that without success. I tried two different debit cards, three different browsers, two different computers, but every time it failed, and the email help contact of the club has still not admitted that the problem is at their end, and it's 5 days later. Still, at least I was spared Uncle Roy, who I gather spent the whole match fielding messages from people who had managed to subscribe but couldn't get the bloody commentary. They can't hear us in Bristol, apparently. I've checked, and I haven't accidentally pulled the microphone cable out with my foot like I did about 20 times last season. So there must be some sort of problem. Who are you talking to, Roy? I don't know. Anyway, I ended up listening to a commentary from BBC Radio Devon. And it was good, and it was smart and interesting and unbiased and well-informed, and I imagine they could hear it in Bristol. And I'll tell you this, I follow cannot afford to let people know that an alternative like that is available, because nobody will be listening to Roy at all. Next week we play Dorking, who were a bunch of mates playing friendlies in a park about 15 years ago. And it's true. And the same guy who made them into a proper team and is still the manager and still the owner. And we're live on BT Sport. So next week I'll tell you all about how I don't manage to get to see that. Our madcap new owner, Frank Rothwell, has been photographed filling in potholes at Boundary Park, leading teams of volunteers cleaning bird shit off the seats before the first home game on Saturday. Very hands-on. Good for him. And there were photos of his motorbike as well, which we were a bit worried about last week, him travelling by motorbike. But it's massive. It's a massive tangerine-painted trike, which seemed to be trailing a keg of beer behind it as a trailer, and which broke down on the way to Torquay. Oh, well. It just goes to show that steam power isn't as reliable as they say. James Watt, Robert Stevenson, all those lads. But anyway, we were talking about Stoke a moment ago, and it was astonishing to hear the brief flurry of interest in Marko Arnautovic from Old Trafford. Wow. Now, he's an old boy of yours, isn't he? He's a former Potter.
He is a former Potter and a very, very, very good player. Took him a long time to settle, but then he was fantastic.
And he was great for West Ham as well. I mean, he's a really good player, Arnautovic.
He's a very good player. I mean, the thing that actually didn't upset me on Marco's behalf, because you always have a little bit of affection for players that have played for you. Apart from the fact that...
So Chris Sutton hasn't played for you ever, no?
No, but Chris Sutton was the one that said... It's madness. It's a PR disaster to go. Now, when did team signing suddenly become subject to a public vote?
They provoke public discontent. However, it doesn't usually rise to the level that it seems to have done this time. You look at Arnautovic, he's had more than 100 caps for Austria. He's a formidable player. I mean, 3 years ago he left West Ham to play in China, which is basically retiring. And last season he was in Bologna, which is, nice enough, but not exactly an elite club. But, but United have a great track record over the years of picking up international strikers who are past their sell-by date.
George Graham.
Yeah. But Ibrahimovic and Cavani last year. And arguably Ronaldo,
They had that bloke, was it Watford, didn't they?
Odion Ighalo.
Exactly. And also, the other thing is, Arnautovic scored 15 goals in Serie A last season.
Yeah.
Now, there was a time when that would have been top scorer.
When that would have been impressive.
So I think it's a bit fair. And also, Erik ten Hag seems determined only to sign players that he personally knows, because he's managed him.
He must be looking wherever he can for some sort of comfort blanket at the moment, mustn't he? The pursuit of Arnautovic is like Shades of Moyes, isn't it? Spending the whole summer chasing Cesc Fabregas and ending up on deadline day with Marouane Fellaini. Ten Hag has been after Frenkie de Jong the whole summer, like for 14 weeks now. Yeah. But Chelsea now seem to be sniffing around him, and they have Champions League football, don't they? And players do seem to like that for some reason. And apparently United pulled out of the Arnautovic thing because of a deluge of entitled complaining from United fans saying that it was an insult to the fan base. I mean, really, why would he want to come to your club after that? And why would anyone want to go to United if there's that? And now they're talking about this ludicrous thing of the campaign. It's on all over the internet just now. Empty Old Trafford. They want the stadium to be empty as a protest for the Liverpool game. You could empty Boundary Park. This was a thing that they tried to do last year, was persuade people to boycott and empty Boundary Park. And you can empty Boundary Park. It's nearly bloody empty anyway. But Old Trafford, everyone's standing outside Old Trafford not going in. Other people will go in and have your seats. That's what's going to happen. It's United Liverpool. It's not going to be empty. It's not going to look like anything. And you just look like a bunch of spoiled tossers. Basically.
Yeah. And you're going to get all those people flying over from China to not go into the ground. That's just a waste of money, to tell you the honest truth. I also think the bad thing about Arnautovic is, yes, the message to the player is awful, but the message to the manager is awful.
I mean, he's had one game. It didn't go well, but he's had one game.
Yeah.
You know.
And they're already telling him he's no judge of a player. So that's absolutely staggering.
Well, yeah, no. And, you know, he's judged some pretty decent players. He just hasn't managed to persuade them to go to a club that's going to be in the Europa League next season. Yes, and, you know, the game on Saturday. I can't remember now. It was without sports reports, I'm lost. Yes. Sunday. Man United losing at home to Brighton. One of the least shocking shock results imaginable. Because, you know, the pre-season's all been the buzz about how United have been winning their pre-season game. Beat Liverpool 4-0, didn't they? They're all back on track now. Yep. How Erik ten Hag has sorted them out, you know, sorted out the defence, all this. But as soon as you saw them playing a proper game, you could see they're just the same as last season. You know, at least for now. And whatever it is that's been wrong with them, it's still wrong with them. And poor Marcus Rashford still seems to have his barn door problem. You know, the defence still looks rocky, even with Lisandro Martinez added, who's a player I think that Ten Hag has managed before, isn't he? And the midfield's still not winning the ball back enough. They had Christian Eriksen, who's a great playmaker, but someone who likes other people to get the ball for him. And he was playing as a false nine. Because they haven't brought in a striker. Rashford likes playing out on the left. And Ronaldo was on the bench because he'd been sulking. And, you know, Ten Hag still hasn't brought in the new guys that they need. It's true. They haven't. And, you know, but I think, you know, against Brighton, if they could have brought on Arnautovic, he might have made a difference.
I think he almost certainly would have made a difference. What they did, I'm listening to the commentary, Martin Tyler, I think it was. And Ronaldo came on and literally 20 seconds later, he said, "Oh, I'm Brighton, not looking so secure since Ronaldo's come on." You think 20 seconds? 20 seconds. He's been on the pitch.
Yeah.
And I don't think he had a touch. You know, it's just staggering.
Yeah, and so apparently they're also United interested in Ismail Assar now, who was at Watford last season and looked a good player. Looked like the player that Watford would be able to transfer to a Premier League club, and it looks like they're going to transfer him to Leeds. You know, but it's odd, as you say, Odio Nigalo they had as a stopgap, didn't they? From there, it's an odd level of player that they seem to be looking at now. I mean, I think they must have been slapped down so many times by players who want to play in the Champions League, and want to go to Chelsea. Look like they're going to have a what would you call it? A sort of Bowley binge. He's going to sort of start becoming, you know, the new Abramovich properly.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Which is just fueling the, what would you call it, the Glazer glumness, you know, amongst United fans. Because Bowley is looking at Aubameyang from Barcelona, and he's looking at pinching there. Frankie de Jong.
He's
looking at paying $80 million for Fofana from Leicester.
Yeah.
You know, and United, I think this is what the United fans are doing. They're sitting at home looking at Chelsea, looking at Spurs strengthening and thinking, why can't we do it? It's because you didn't play well enough last year, that's why. Because you were only sixth last year. And
it's not that they haven't got, I mean, they've there are a lot of good players there, but they don't seem to be playing for each other. They don't seem to have a cohesive system. I mean, this false nine, I hate even saying the two words together, false and nine, but that clearly didn't work for Eriksen at all. And Maguire, I feel really sorry for him. What is this bullying stuff that's going? You can see his confidence is completely shattered. And bullying is bullying in whatever situation. And some people, you know, I get the impression that people give him short shrift because they go, he's a big lad, he can take it.
He can take care of himself, he can handle it. Yeah.
You know, and we've all those big soft lads, haven't we, over the years?
Yeah. And as you say, with, you know, the Ronaldo-centric commentary of that Brighton game, I think Brighton didn't get any of the credit they deserve from that. I mean, they look very busy, they look very organised. They've lost two of their best players, Bissouma and Cucurella, to the bench at Spurs and the bench at Chelsea. But otherwise, they just carried on where they left off. And Danny Welbeck looked well up for it, didn't he? When he's fit. I mean, he's such a dangerous player when he's fit, because you just don't know. It could go in off his knee, it could go off his heel. You know, he's the sort of player, he's strong and mobile and just a real nuisance. And just the sort of player United should be looking at getting back. You know, they always do that, don't they, when they become dissatisfied with the striker that's homegrown because he's not a big money signing and all this, and they start agitating for some big name 35-year-old who they can pay 300 grand a week for half a season. You know, and it, it it's Welbeck would be a step up on what they have.
Not that I've seen all the games in his career, but I think he's playing some of the best football I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
He looks just so much. I mean, even when he was not fully fit, you know, he was winning balls in the air and stuff like that. But now he's more mobile. He looks a real bloody handful. And Stoke could have him. Honestly, we would.
Yeah,
we would.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not saying he wouldn't play week in, week out.
He'll play every game.
No. Now, just one final thing on United. If you've kind of done on United, I don't know whether you are.
Well, tell me one final thing.
Well, I wanted to read from the Sunday Times. They have the thing called My Club, you know, obviously, and they have somebody either from another sport or from showbiz or whatever to describe their club and why they support them and blah blah blah. And I thought this is a classic. Derek Chisora, lovely chap, I'm sure, and I'm not going to be slagging off any boxers.
No, but
lovely chap, and he's got Manchester United down. And this reminds me of several people I know that support Manchester United. Okay, so here's one of the questions, one of the listings is, my least favourite player. Derek Chisora's answer, all of them. All of them except Cristiano Ronaldo, because they're not winning anything. And what is it that Cristiano Ronaldo's winning at the moment, apart from the occasional player of the month?
Well, I know. Did you see? I saw just earlier on that Goal have chosen their greatest ever Manchester United team. And, you know, this is just a piece of fill, obviously, but it goes Schmeichel, Neville, Ferdinand, Duncan Edwards, Dennis Irwin, good pick. Charlton, Keane, Robson in midfield, Best, Law and Ronaldo up front. And, you know, is Ronaldo, presumably he's in there because of his first stint at United, but was he the player he became when he was first at United? Isn't that his Real Madrid reputation that's getting him in there ahead of, let's say, Cantona or Scholes or Rooney or Beckham, you know?
I wonder whether
Oh, Duxbury, yes, exactly. Clayton Blackmore.
Neil Webb.
Neil Webb, all the greats. Yeah. I mean, he's such a dazzlingly overbearing presence, I think. That's the thing that is so unlikable about him. I think, you know, some of it isn't his fault, but some of it is. And, you know, when United were doing badly against Brighton, the cameras are on Ronaldo on the bench, holding his head, you know, waving his arms in the air in despair, you know. Just get over yourself, man.
Also sitting on the bench, he's bad enough standing in the technical area. You can't see much of the game from there. But sitting on the bench, you can hardly see anything of the game.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, your proper decent tactician managers or assistant managers go up higher up. Just one final thing from Derek Chisora in this interview. Okay, so this is a little long, but
you know that if you see a boxer in the street and you've given him a hard time, he's not going to hit you because he knows he'll go to jail. So you're perfectly safe. Right. You're perfectly safe if you go up against the boxer you've slagged off.
Well, there's two things I don't want. I don't want to be hit by him, and I don't want to marry him. Is that a little fickle? Comes the next question. Yeah, too right it is. Why would you be loyal to something that gives you stress every day? We should be loyal to our wives at home who cook for us, feed us and look after us. Not to a bunch of guys who earn millions but don't want to play for your club. Clubs don't care. If you need a heart transplant or you're homeless, try phoning up your local football club and you say you need money. Oh, take it from me. They won't respond. Okay,
you know, Derek Chisora sounds like a guest in waiting on this show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's got a good, solid attitude.
Yeah, he says, take the money you spend on a season ticket and use it on your wife and kids. That's a better way. And you're not fickle about them. And in fact, I'm actually done with English football. I don't want to be
He's given up during the course of the questionnaire.
wait, there's one more sentence. So I'm done with English football. I don't want to be a United fan anymore.
It's fantastic. Dear. Well done. Three cheers to Derek Chisora.
Basically, they've interviewed him, and as you say, by the end of the interview...
By the end of the interview, he's realised
that
he's been wasting his life. Well, on the subject of wasting our lives, as Chris Sutton has already told us, that the title race is done and dusted. May as well start watching now. I mean, Liverpool are already 2 points behind City, and they're clearly both going to win all their remaining games. At least they're going to be predicted to by Chris Sutton. And so, you know, that's it. That's it. May as well start watching now. City unleashed Ivan Drago on their first opponents, didn't they, West Ham? He won a penalty, which he scored, and then galloped clear to score a second towards the end. I didn't know, did you see this? I was a little suspicious of the penalty, because it just doesn't look like anybody could bring him down. It'd be like trying to trip a tractor, you know. I don't know.
Well, what I quite liked about the penalty was he was trying to go round the keeper, wasn't he? And you just don't see that anymore. I love it when people go round the keeper.
Yeah, yeah. And that is, it's such a much better, however good the penalty was, if he'd gone round the keeper and scored, it would have been a better goal. But anyway, it's looking good for City and Drago himself, but it's still the first part of the movie, isn't it? And he has to look indestructible to begin with so that you get the drama when Rocky twats him later on. You know? And who knows what potential discontent might ultimately undermine him. I mean, he was taken off so he couldn't get a hat trick, and he didn't look particularly pleased about that. His dad left, you know, then presumably to beat the traffic, and who knows, maybe he'll get as bored watching City's interminable build-up play as I did. Man, that was a dull game.
It was a dull game.
You know, aesthetically pleasing dull game. I mean, he's like a cross, isn't he, between Ivan Drago and My Little Pony Erling Braut Haaland.
A little bit. I think that Mrs. Haaland left because she wanted to listen to Sports Report.
That's right. Haaland going to listen to. Let's hear what's happening around the country.
I've had a few bets. I'm allowed to. I'm not a player anymore. I just want to listen to results. One of my favourite things in the commentary on that one was, what do we know about Haaland? We know that he scores goals.
Okay. I was going to say, we know that he looks like a cartoon character.
I think he looks like a character out of Tolkien or Game of Thrones or something like
that. Exactly. I don't want to call him the thing that he would be, you know.
So then Haaland scores a penalty, right? The commentator said, there is 1-0, Haaland's first goal, and I would suggest it's the first of many. called it. Good one, mate.
And so earlier on, Liverpool had got a draw away at Fulham, and Mitrovic scored a couple, didn't they? Which is about half of what he normally gets in a Premier League season. And Liverpool were off it, I think, having been the better side in the Community Shield the week before. Nunes got a debut goal. Salah scored on the opening day for the sixth year in a row, but they're playing catch up now. It's pretty much all over, you know. That's the word Sutton Towers, you know. Did you see? Arsenal won the first game of the season, having lost famously in the first game last season.
Brentford, wasn't it?
Brentford, the equivalent game. And they really do, secretly, quietly rather, look to have improved. You know, I think Zinchenko looked great in the Ukraine in the World Cup playoffs. He looked great in the midfield, and City had never played him there. They've only used him as a sort of left wing back, but as a playmaker he looks great, and I think he might have a good time at Arsenal. And they're going to have this new documentary accompanying their season, aren't they, Arsenal?
Oh yes, of course.
And this week the revelation was that Arteta was so determined to justify booting Aubameyang out that he'd compiled a dossier of his misdemeanours, and some of them were very little. Five minutes late for training and this sort of thing. Some of them were not coming back after an international break, a little bit more hefty. But whatever tiny little thing Aubameyang had done was in this dossier. You know, he put foreign coins in the coffee machine, you know, things like this. And, you know, there were plenty at the club who didn't want him to go, you know, because he was their main goal scorer. He always had a big smile on his face. He's a popular fella. But Arteta was determined to get rid of him. And that's the big revelation from the documentary.
Talking about fines, when we went with my son to the game on Saturday, and our first goal was scored by our loney, Harry Clark from Arsenal, indeed.
Who was at Oldham,
He scored a header and he then, he did a sew. Do you know what that is? No. I didn't.
You didn't what? And how are we spelling that?
S-I-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U-U.
Okay.
Well, apparently, which is basically Ronaldo's celebration.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and so Harvey immediately says to me, oh, that's ruined it for me now. That's really ruined that goal for me. And I was very pleased to then see on Tuesday that he'd been fined.
For doing that?
Yes, for doing the Ronaldo celebration.
Good, good for
by
Stoke.
By the other players.
That's that's very good for morale, I think.
Yeah. I think so. So there's morale, certainly.
Yeah. So the big game that's being, you know, being trailed as the most interesting game of the weekend coming is Steven Gerrard against Lampard, as they're styling the Villa Everton game.
Is it going to be room for both of them in the ground, do you think?
Well, exactly. Luckily, they have their own technical areas, don't they? But, yes. You know, if Scholes and Beckham come to the game, they're going to have to have a couple more. One of them's going to have to stand in the tunnel.
One of them can manage one half and the other can manage the next half.
But, yeah, so Steven Gerrard has come in for a little bit of stick in the last week, I've noticed, because they lost their first game to Bournemouth, who, as Chris Sutton said, are going to lose all their games this season. And so that was a bit of a shock. You know, and the social media has discovered that result means that his record is currently exactly the same as Gary Neville's at Valencia, apparently.
Really?
Yes, and thank you, social media, for that one. But he's come under a bit of stick for it. Looks like things are a little bit rough between him and some of the players, because he stripped Mings of the captaincy, didn't he? And Mings is a decent player and an articulate sort of a presence, and he's made McGinn. McGinn is captaincy material. You can see that. You wouldn't want to argue with that. But then having stripped Mings of the captaincy, obviously there's been something between them, and then he dropped Mings for the Bournemouth game. And he dropped Ollie Watkins as well. Apparently, there's been something between him and Ollie Watkins. Worrying signs, I think, of losing patience with his players. And he's come down with a big reputation, having turned Rangers around. But I'm up here in Scotland, and Matthew, my nephew, who's in the house that I'm staying in, Livingston fan, he says that people up here are very iffy about Steven Gerrard, because he only won one trophy out of the nine that he was up for, the domestic ones for Rangers. And so, you know, he won the league, which is good, but then the rest of the time, you know, it's not, he didn't run away with it up here. He didn't steamroll.
No, he didn't. One of my brother-in-laws is a big, big Rangers fan, and he said that Rangers have been, he thinks they've been a lot better since Van Bronckhorst has been there.
They had a good result, didn't they, in the qualifying for the Champions League, I think.
They went 3-0. They'd lost 2-0.
Having lost 2-0 and then they won 3-0.
Charleroi, wasn't it? Yeah.
Union something.
I mean, The thing about the dressing room is that's going to be the key area. If you're falling out with two regular first team players.
And two England players.
But they're not going to be talking to the others about it. You know? They're not going to not be doing that. No. You know, clearly there's going to be, you know, I don't know, a pig's head put in his locker or something.
Yeah,
like
well, or, and Lampard know, so. Has Lampard has well, he started with a defeat to Chelsea, which must have been difficult for him to take, I guess. But he's brought in some good players, I think. I mean, I've always been a fan of Tarkowski, who was at Oldham, but also at Burnley, and should still be in and around the England squad. I don't quite know why he's dropped away from it. And they've brought in Connor Cody. Oh, I'm astonished that Connor Cody has got. How Wolves letting Connor Cody go on loan to Everton is just astonishing. But what a great centre half pairing that's going to be. You know, Cody and Tarkowski. Because Cody is a very mouthy player, isn't he? And very controlling, and very good organizer. And we'll
but
go.
Not,
to,
not we'll con- go- let's just stress not controlling in the Ryan Giggs sense.
Well, let's hope not. Tarkowski, when he was at Oldham, they called him the new Mostyn Beckenbauer. They called him.
And the new Mostyn Beckenbauer,
which I really like. But it was because his style of play was different at Burnley, actually, because he was much more of a brick wall of a player, of winning headers and things. But he's in there is a player who can come out with the ball at his feet and run from one penalty area to the other. And, you know, in there, if Lampard can get that out of him, is a really very good player who should get back into the England setup, I think.
And they've got Mina as well and Keane, haven't they?
Yes. So they're well set up at the back, I think. They might have a better season. He's brought two other players this week, a midfielder and a winger, I think.
Yeah.
So you know they might. You know they were a bit unlucky to lose to Chelsea. I think because it was.
Yeah, I think they were too. And as you say, they're well served for centre backs. Not as well served as if they had Tony Pulis as manager. I have to say, when half of our squad were centre backs. He played them all over the place. In fact, one he played up front for about five games. But yeah. There you go. I think we've come to the end of our allotted time on this earth.
Oh no!
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Is this how I get to hear?
Oh no! I've misheard. No, it's the podcast has come to the end of its.
Oh, thank Christ for that.
I tell you, typical. I'd be at work when I die. Typical.
But, well, that is so atypical. I have to say, that you're at work
yes,
at all.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Typical of my luck. There you go. All right. Thanks very much, Chris. Don't forget, we've got the live show on the 11th. You can tweet us. You can write to us. I don't know where you'd write to us, but you can do.
That's covered by you can tweet us, I think.
Is it? Is that the same? Just it's a learning curve for me, sunshine. It's a learning curve. So thank you very much. And thank you to our guest, nobody.
I'm guessing that's going to be cut.